Welcome to the GRC and Me podcast, where we tackle the hottest topics and latest challenges circulating the GRC industry. I'm your host, Megan Manivel, and today we're diving into the ever-shifting world of compliance in banking. Whether you're new to the financial industry, trying to understand shifting regulations, or a seasoned pro like my guest today, we can't wait to debunk some myths and dive into strategies for success with you. Joining me today is Steph Southard, a 25-year veteran in the finance and security space with experience in SOC, PCI, ISO, and so much more. She's helped companies pass hundreds of audits and knows exactly what it takes to thrive in today's compliance landscape. Welcome, Steph.
So, Steph, why don't you begin by telling me one of your favorite childhood memories?
Probably one of my favorite childhood memories was walking with my grandpa out in the back pasture to go feed the horses. And I remember always, you know, he would have his buckets or pails to go feed them. And I always wanted to feed them something different. So I would stuff in my pockets like chicken nuggets and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and all these things that I loved that I thought the horses would much rather be eating. And for the longest time, he would never see me sneaking them those foods. And he finally caught up with it. And then he bought me actually my first horse, and we called it Chicken Nugget because that's all I ever wanted to feed the dog. So
That's
definitely,
perfect.
I love that memory with my grandfather. But definitely, whenever I see horses, I'm like, where are chicken nuggets? I have to go
Where
get
are
them
chicken
some chicken
nuggets?
nuggets.
That's so funny. So horses like chicken nuggets, then. That's what we're
Yes,
learning
they do.
here.
I can confirm. And peanut butter and jelly.
Fantastic. Awesome. So now as we're going through, whenever you're nervous, just think about chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
All right.
Got it.
Got it. Well, welcome, Steph. Why don't we go ahead and start, and you tell me a little bit about how did you get into GRC?
Oh, yeah. So it was looking for that, you know, framework and foundation as I was building up the IT and security programs. We were looking for those controls on how can we really gauge and manage everything that we needed to under those programs. And I quickly discovered that GRC was one of those foundations to it. And looking into that deeper, I was able to realize that no one in the organization was doing that or really owning and managing it. And when we started to adopt the PCI DSS and the NIST and the others, that's when we quickly formulated that GRC was very important to the overall, you know, foundation of both of those programs.
Awesome. So kind of made that shift from the IT
Yes.
side into security. I think we see that a lot, right? A lot of overlaps there. And frankly, when you're in IT, if you're good at something, it just becomes your job, right? So I heard you were quite good at audits and compliance where you are. So knowing that you are quite the expert in that industry, we're going to talk about a couple of myths that we have heard. So coming into this, we collected a couple of things, and we're going to talk about one of them here first. So one of the myths that we've heard here is that only banks over $500 million or a billion-dollar threshold need that robust compliance program. So people seem to think that if you're under that threshold, that compliance really isn't important. How do you feel about that one, Steph?
It's totally a myth, 100%. You know, while banks crossing these thresholds do face those additional regulatory requirements, all banks, credit unions, regardless of their size, must effectively have compliance programs to manage those risks and adhere to regulations. Banks with assets over 500 million are required to have annual audit financial statements and have an independent audit committee come in. When banks reach that 1 million in assets, they face even stricter requirements, such as having a complete independent audit committee and expanded management reporting. That said, even those smaller banks also need to have those compliance programs to ensure that they meet regulatory standards also. And compliance is essential for maintaining the integrity and the stability of all the financial institutions out there, regardless of their size.
That's a really great point. And I think sometimes you're right. People think, oh, I'm a little bit smaller. Maybe there's not as much, you know, exposure there. I always used to joke like, oh, go ahead, steal my identity. I don't have much money in my savings account. You can take
Right.
it, you know? But I think sometimes you overlook some of those things. And so really focusing on maybe it's not super strict compliance, but at least putting some steps in place, right, early on as you grow as an organization.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. So, well, that's a really great myth. Like I said, we've been actually hearing that around a lot of who has to comply. And I just love hearing how you spelled that out. So that those baby steps there.
Yes.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit then, and let's go with some rapid fire questions. So don't think, just answer.
Okay.
First one here, we're going to focus on credit union for a moment. How should credit unions stay current with this ever-changing regulations that we have?
Oh gosh, engaging with regulatory bodies, ongoing awareness, education, compliance tools implemented in your environment, create those relationships and stay current with regulators.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. Education, relationships, very key in this sense. Absolutely. All
Yes.
right. Next one. What is the number one fear of a credit union CISO? What do you think keeps CISOs up at night?
You know, it's always changing. What was keeping me up last week may not be what's keeping me up next week. But to be honest, there's so many different things. Probably if I had to narrow it down to one thing, it would be vendor management. There's so many third and fourth party incidents, and they just continue to explode, and they continue to be more impactful. And we have very little knowledge or control over those fourth parties that are engaged with our third party vendors. So it always is, what are we not seeing, and what is going on with those fourth parties that we're not aware about?
Yeah, the fourth, the fifth, all the other people, you can't see everybody, right? So that's
Right.
a really great point. I can see that probably being a challenge. Credit unions, banks, lots of folks, I'm sure. So
Right.
that's a great one. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So then how do you think credit unions or banks or financial institutions should start approaching dealing with some of those new regulations? How can they, integrate them into their existing programs? And we're thinking about things like, PCI 4.0 is now, more prevalent and coming up on the deadlines. Some of these other regulations.
Yeah, great question. I think the first thing to do is do a gap analysis, understand what you have in place and what is missing. Also, look at your policies and procedures and how those adhere to the regulations that are being put forth. Invest in technology upgrades. Nobody wants to do it, but a lot of those have those capabilities to help start that integration. And as before, training and awareness to all folks involved with those new regulations coming in. Engage with vendors and partners often, and you continuously monitor for what is successful, what is not, and where those other gaps may lie.
Oh, I like that. That's good. Look for those gaps, and then as you start to fill them, look for the bigger ones, fill where you can, and then continually assess that. That's really great advice. And I think taking that real auditor approach to it, of being really methodical and outlining what some of those gaps are, then allows you to risk prioritize them, right? Where's that impact, like you mentioned? What's going to get us sort of the biggest bang for our buck, if you
Yeah.
will, when we're integrating these? So
Exactly.
awesome. Awesome. Well, you're doing good. So we're going to keep
Good.
going on the
Good.
rapid
Okay.
fire. So, all right. So the next one is, how can you measure the effectiveness of those compliance programs? So, sometimes we talk about, you passed an audit. So, like, yay, we're good, thumbs up. But there's probably a little bit more to that, right? I'm guessing.
Right. So true, right? It always is good to build that in-house team that can kind of monitor that. But if you can't, then work with other organizations and vendors that specialize in assessing in those areas. If you have a GRC tool, definitely load all that information in because it can help you understand, measure, and gauge where you need to be more effective. And as always, watch out for those gaps and those risks and make sure you're communicating those across and upward.
Yeah. It's funny. I was on an event last week. We kind of did a Mythbusters thing, and somebody was asking, is it better to find it in an internal audit than an external audit? And I thought, yes, of course, find those
Right.
gaps first, right? I think they were maybe asking as sort of a joke, but it's true. Finding those gaps early allows you to fix them before you get some of those audits coming in. So, great advice for those of us who might be thinking, I'll just wait for the external audit. Not a good time.
Yes.
So. But, thinking about some of those challenges and of course fixing those gaps, what are you seeing, whether it's with you or some of your peers, when we're trying to stay audit ready? How do we prepare for some of those audits, ahead of time?
It's always making sure you have as much information up front, right? Two of the most tedious things are evidence collection, gathering all those necessary documents and other evidence that they can, get in that time. But then also the staff and the budget constraints are very limited sometimes. So using those resources, it can make it difficult to allocate and suffice enough time and personnel to that. So always being ahead of it to make sure you've either got those resources in-house and you're looking at that evidence collection all year round. So when they do come, it's very easily passed on.
Yeah, you touched on that, the year-round collection there, and it kind of goes with what you were saying on the last question too about using that GRC tool, right? Like, how can you capture it but then keep it organized so it's usable for, the future and for those audits and things like that? Would you say that you've seen sort of the reduction there, that ease with using a GRC tool and some more of that automation, being able to capture that evidence faster and more real time, more regularly?
Night and day difference, right? Absolutely. It's nice having that system actually be the management tool where all that stuff is gathered, but it also is having the controls and understanding what we're collecting for that some people get lost in. And having all that in a GRC tool makes all of those much easier to deal with.
I love that. I love that. Well, awesome. Couple more. You mentioned third and fourth parties before when we were talking a little bit about that being an issue there. What are some of the best practices or ways that you've approached vendor risk management to kind of weave them in a little bit there with your credit, with your overall compliance strategy?
Sure. It's taken a while. It hasn't been easy. I will be very honest. When I first started working at VCU, we came in and we had 12, 1500 vendors, and they were all at their department level able to work with those. But we really weren't taking a quick look, or we weren't taking a holistic look at how is this really value add to the organization, right? So consistent vendor evaluations are always very important. Risk-based classification and reviews, comprehensive vendor due diligence reviews, and also putting language in the contracts that also not only adhere to some of the operational, but some of those security or other requirements that we want to put on our vendors. So leveraging that technology and different things will help to do that.
Yeah, and I imagine some automation along the way too with those assessments and being able to send them out, more in bulk across your vendor ecosystem there. So very cool. Yeah, that's always a challenging one for sure is keeping track of all those folks. So sounds like you've got a pretty good handle on it though, Steph.
We're trying.
Well, honestly, it seems like you got a good handle on it. You're talking about the risk classifications associated with them, really looking at that impact of that third party, and that's really where you got to be. I think the old days of, sending out a generic questionnaire are gone. You really need to focus in on what's critical, what's mattered, and that's, what you mentioned just there. So.
And I think it's worth noting that LogicGate has helped us get that with their risk-based cloud solution, right? So much of that we're able now to lean in to help with the system or the module that we've been able to get through the LogicGate system. So we're very lucky we are able to do that with you guys.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, and it definitely the flexible workflows, I'm sure, help too as your ecosystem grows and being able to adapt how you collect. And yeah, well, that's awesome to hear. We certainly appreciate that. So, last question, and we're going to shift gears a little bit. I'm really curious. I'm an AI junkie. I know there's been a lot of talk about AI, of course, so we couldn't get out of here without talking about it. What role is AI playing in enhancing compliance management? And what are some of those limitations, right? There's a little bit of that kind of double-edged sword when it comes to AI. And I'm curious to see if you're, how you're preparing for it, how you're dealing with it there, kind of how it's playing out.
Sure. It plays a huge role, even at credit unions and other banks. Data privacy and unauthorized access are two of those biggest concerns we have around AI. So in parallel of working with the organization of implementing, we're making sure that data is protected and only those authorized to see those certain types of data can. And CU should create an acceptable use standard at first to kind of understand exactly what they're allowing, who's using those, but also, what are the vendors doing with it? A lot of vendors today are also adopting and pulling in AI, and it's a great service. But again, we have to be careful that there's not anything happening from a security perspective where information shouldn't be shared or is unauthorized or is labeled as PII and is being leaked into other, AI capabilities.
Yeah. I mean, just like you said, with the vendors, understanding the impact, I kind of think of AI as almost like another third party, another vendor that you have to look at. Again, what do they have access to? What's that risk? What's that impact to our business? And definitely weigh in those pros and cons. I think there's quite a few of them now. So you mentioned earlier what keeps you up at night tends to change from day to day or circumstances. So let's take a little bit different approach. Looking towards the future, looking towards 2025, what are some things that you're planning to address, or what are your predictions for where we're going to go next year?
Definitely, of course, AI, right? The usage of AI and machine learning is hot, and it's how can we all engage and bring it into our organizations? But as we discussed a little bit earlier, there's the flip side of that, which is how do we make sure it's safe and how do we protect the information? But definitely, AI is hot and heavy. Zero trust architecture. It was really popular, a few years back, but with all these different regulations and all these ransomware and attacks that are just really hitting all different sectors and organizations, more and more people are now looking at zero trust and bringing that architecture in to just be another layer of defense. And the old but good one is always training and security awareness. We're only as strong as our weakest link, and a lot of different things come through either our emails or come from our vendor systems. So how can we just protect prepare all of our end users to just kind of be cyber savvy and spider or the hairs stand up on the back of their neck? They get spider senses when things
Yes.
don't look right, right? And how can we prepare them, put enough tools in their tool bag belt to make them feel successful in their stance against those type of attacks.
Yeah. Cyber savvy. I like that. But and it's true. I mean, security really is everyone's job. I know that's kind of a joke. It's kind of, something people throw around. But it, if the end users are, confused about something or aren't trained on something, doesn't matter how good your technology is, it's, something's going to break there for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned a couple times different technologies or tools that you might use to better protect your credit union or your financial institution. And I'm curious a little bit about like what that tech stack looks like. Is it, are you trying to consolidate? Are there multiple areas, a little distributed? How does that look for you as a CISO these days?
Yeah, the answer from a CISO is going to be different than the answer from our CFO. From his perspective, it's let's shrink the cost and have as little as we can. But to be truthfully honest and transparent, it's having multiple systems that I think makes you stronger and more prepared. And it's also layers where some of the same systems may do similar things, but it's a backup. Email filters is a perfect example. URL filtering in your webs is another one. A lot of different systems out there offer that. But it is bringing in those multiple layers. And I've also noticed over the last few years, there's more and more systems and tools out there than there's ever been. Starting in this field 15, 20 years ago, it was very limited. It was what lived in Microsoft, and it just continued to explode. And nowadays, we do have multiple vendors and we do have options if we don't like just going with one. And I think that's what a lot of organizations can take to say, here's our budget, here's our need, what are our opportunities? And from there, they're able to find someone. Before, it was you would either just pay that one cost for Microsoft or you just didn't have those security capabilities in your environment. So
Yeah.
definitely multiple ones.
So true, so true. But then that leads to the how do you track all that stuff, right? If you got multiple systems and stuff. So I heard you mention earlier too, feeding that all into that centralized location so you can act upon it in a lot, quicker way, more efficient way.
Exactly. You got it. Yeah, your reporting and all streaming it through that one capability will kind of give you that overall holistic look about how everything's doing. And that's better than picking five or six resources to manage all those different systems and tools.
For sure. Excellent. Well, awesome. Well, as we move towards the end of our episode, I want to talk a little bit about strategies for success. So you've had quite the career, as we talked about, moving from IT into audit, all things compliance there. And I'm curious if someone is maybe just starting out or wants to kind of make that pivot, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever gotten on working in security and specifically cross-functionally? Because I think that's always a challenge with folks in the GRC area.
Yeah. Number one is I always say this role requires someone to be able to zig and zag, be very flexible, be elastic in their oversight also. I never really understood that, until really the last 10 years of my life and or career. And a lot of that is based on security. There's so much going on that you can't spend time in one certain area. You can't no longer say, I'm an expert in servers, for example, right? There's so much more across the tapestry that we have to be involved in. And you must just be able to predict what is going to happen instead of kind of just sitting back or waiting, especially again in the security world, because we can't see what's coming. And being able to predict and being able to kind of have those plans or those processes in place. If they play out, it puts us so much better in the game. And I think first few years in my career, that was me, right? It was more after the fact, but getting more predictable ha has really helped, I think, in my career, also in my growth. And that's the recommendation I give to everyone. Just be prepared to be flexible and cover a lot of things.
It's really true, and I think it leans into a little bit about just the security industry or the GRC industry. And when we think about it, I joke sometimes with my friends, like I am risk averse by nature and by career, right? Like I made a career out of managing risk and identifying these challenges. And so when you think about it in that sense, if you're a new auditor or you're somebody coming into this industry who might not have as much security experience, and you go to a security engineer and start asking questions, they're going to be like, I don't know, maybe a little standoffish. And so I think you're right. It's the approach. It's planning ahead. It's understanding. And I think for me, if I were to, answer the same question here, and what advice, that I would give is understand where you're the expert and where you aren't. And I think that I've seen, auditors and other GRC folks who will look at a control test or look at a requirement and just assume that they know it's fine. I get it. It's similar to this framework or what have you. And when you make those kinds of assumptions, it can be very easy to then misinterpret a control, misimplement a control. And so asking for help in an area that you're not an expert is not the end of the world. You can't be an expert on any at everything, right? And if you think you are, that's when you start to get a little bit more
You
dangerous,
miss out,
right? Yeah, exactly.
it's why we go to conferences, it's why we collaborate, it's why we reach out to others, in the same industry, because we just can't be all to one thing. And using those resources, I think, makes you stronger too. So totally agree.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why we have this podcast, right? So we have this GRC and Me podcast to collaborate and share. And so as we wrap up today's episode, I actually want to give a great big thank you to Steph here for sharing your incredible insights. Now you've heard what Steph and I had to say, and we'd love to hear from you in the comments. So what is the best piece of advice that you've ever gotten for working cross-functionally in security? Now, whether you're navigating those new regulations or preparing for your next audit, stay informed and proactive is the key to success. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next GRC and Me podcast.